Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
There's big news. There was a story in The Athletic yesterday. Jerry making moves, perhaps discussing a sale.
A sale.
Of the White Sox.
In active discussions.
He's in active discussions yes. with a group led by Dave Stewart. Yeah, that Dave Stewart.
The same guy. Tony La Russa's confidant.
Huh? Is that what he said?
Obviously, the sentiment all season long, you don't have to be an investigative reporter to understand that there's a movement that people would love to see the White Sox sold. The fan base yes. would be in favor of this news. But as a Sox fan, when you see this news, are you encouraged by the fact that, oh boy, Jerry Reinsdorf might actually be selling the Sox? Or are you concerned about, oh boy, he's selling the Sox to somebody who might want to move the team?
And the White Sox have some options, and they might move out of the city, they might move out of town, they might go to Nashville. What's the future going to be? And we'll get to it.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, good Friday morning. Ruthie Polinsky from the Chicago Sports Network, my co-host on the Big Pro Football Show every night at 5:30, is in for Mully. Good morning, Ruthie.
Good morning. I'm so surprised you're not sick of me yet.
I am not sick of you yet. It's not been that long. I wouldn't get sick of you. It's a fun show to do. This is all that we're talking now. I said, this is talking without makeup. I don't have to wear makeup this morning. That's a good step in the right direction. So it is a good Friday morning. We're going to talk more about things other than pro football. That we'll keep that for later. Bears are off this weekend. But boy, last night, the Major League playoffs delivered. And they had Game 3 in Cleveland. And it will just be known as Game 3 in Cleveland because all the things that happened made that an instant classic. And you might say, Christmas came early. John Kenzie Noel. Big Christmas. Is that his nickname? Big Christmas?
Yeah.
Delivered in the ninth inning with one of the more dramatic home runs that you're going to hear. And you will hear it now.
Plateau, acaba de empatar el encuentro la Navidad en octubre. ¡Qué bárbaro! ¡Qué monstruo!
You can't have much more fun than that.
It's incredible.
Feliz Navidad.
¡Feliz Navidad!
Feliz Navidad.
¡Feliz Navidad!
That was just the beginning. That was the ninth inning. You have to even go back further than that. Guardians are leading, and then the Yankees go back-to-back. They get the big guys homering. It was
Judge.
And Stanton. And they get what they're looking for with two big swings. And then the Guardians come back. And then it goes extra innings. And wherever this guy came from, I don't know. But he was a Brewers draft pick, toiled in the minor leagues. He was traded to Cleveland. He was basically a rookie last year. This year, David Fry makes the All-Star team. He is, to put it in Cub fan terms, Dustin, I think this is probably the best way to put it. He's their version of Ben Zobrist. Plays almost every position. He even caught, I think, for several 25, 30 games this year. David Fry steps up to the plate in the 10th inning after David Fry earlier in this playoff postseason already had a dramatic walk-off. Here he goes again with the walk-off.
Here it comes. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes. How about that? A walk-off two-run home run to the bleachers in left by David Fry. And the magical 2024 season is not done by any means.
Tom Hamilton on the call, right? That was a classic Cleveland broadcaster with a classic Cleveland moment. David Fry does it again. Fun.
It feels like when you know, one guy in the postseason when one guy hits the walk-off, he's always hitting another one. It's just, it's special. Like, this is the time of year where guys get special. And it's just so cool to watch. It's so cool to see it in a city like Cleveland. Best wishes moving forward, but it was really cool to watch last night.
David Fry caught 23 games, played 20 at first base, played 20 in the outfield, 16 in left field, 4 at third base.
He's the Cole Kmet.
Well, that's high praise for both guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. He is Mr. Utility. And the Guardians live to fight another day, and they think it's a special season in Cleveland. I don't think that'll last. But it is fun to see this extended to go into the weekend with a little bit more drama and suspense. And here in Chicago, it fills a lot of people with envy. Watching playoff baseball is so much fun, but you feel so much like you're missing out on something. There's a lot of FOMO going on with baseball observers in Chicago when you watch these playoffs because they are delivering. Now, not so much in the other series, not so much with Mets-Dodgers. Dodgers... Ohtani leads off with a home run, and the Dodgers are just going to town and taking care of the Mets. I think that series feels like it's close to being over more than the other one. The other one might go a little bit longer. Jose Quintana was on the mound for the Mets. He faced Ohtani three times, but it, you know, that just is too deep of a lineup. You're not going to keep them from scoring as many runs as they're scoring. That's just they're too good.
They're about as hot can get.
You have a family member that was there? Your sister was there?
My sister was at the Mets game last night. I guess I should say the Dodgers game. But yeah, it was in New York. And my sister and her boyfriend's a huge diehard Mets fan. And they got nosebleed tickets last night. He was like, we're not missing this. And they thought that would be a good game to go to. Unfortunately for them, it certainly wasn't. But they said they still had a nice time.
Well, I think that the Mets have maxed out. It feels like. And though maybe they're not done yet, but there's an element of magic to their postseason, to their playoffs. But I think when you run into a Dodgers team as deep as they are, Max Muncy setting all kinds of records with getting on base, and you got Ohtani doing his thing. Mookie Betts is getting hot. And I just think the Dodgers are too good. So I think we're staring at Dodgers Yankees, even though the Guardians may have something to say about that. And that would be good for Major League Baseball. Seems like what Major League Baseball wants based on the commercials. And I think that I'm ready for Yankees-Dodgers World Series. So that would be a lot of fun. The Guardians game did not disappoint, flipping back and forth between that and the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks moving to hockey at the United Center. We were there for the red carpet treatment. You saw that at
it was fun at the UC yesterday.
Had you been there before for the red carpet?
I had never covered it. I didn't cover it for NBC. And Mike Berman was there for NBC yesterday. But I did enjoy seeing that. It's a great environment. It was cool to see all the fans that come out for that. I think that's awesome.
It's become somewhat of a tradition. They started this back in the heyday, if you will, and they took advantage of the popularity of those teams. And that was an event each and every year. And there would be even as many fans as were there last night surrounding the United Center before they dropped the puck, before all the pregame festivities. There were more before. There, like in the past, it would be more crowded. So what you saw last night was a team in the Blackhawks that after five games, I think they're better than people expected. Now, it's only five games, but they are more competitive, more interesting, more everything than they have been the last couple of years. It's a low bar to clear, but they seem to have cleared it pretty well so far.
It's really cool to see them playing with sort of a different level of confidence, I think, than they've played in years, especially last year. And even, you know, Connor Bedard just looks older. I don't know. He's got something about him that I just feel like there's this swagger and confidence. He knows he belongs. And it's really fun to watch. He's no look pass. I mean, Patrick
Mahomes.
The
no look pass was cool.
That was cool.
He did a Mahomes.
Yeah.
He did do a Mahomes. And he also has benefited from playing with Teuvo Teravainen. Now, they did a nice job in this offseason of going out and getting some veterans to give Bedard some talent to play with. It was too much to ask for him to carry the team for. He's going to carry the team for as long as he is here. But to do all of the heavy lifting. So these veterans that they've surrounded him with, it's nice to have a dynamic player like Tavo who sees the ice as almost as well and similarly that Bedard does. And you have seen these two work very well together. They're on a line with Nick Foligno, the veteran captain who, you know, adds something, adds a little intangible to every shift. So, yeah, Bedard is fun to watch. They're playing pretty good defense in front of Peter Mrazek, and they beat the San Jose Sharks. Now, the San Jose Sharks obviously did not have Macklin Celebrini. They did not. They are not one of the best teams in the Western Conference, but Blackhawks did what they needed to do, 4-2. Tyler Bertuzzi gets on the board for the first time this year. He had a nice little deflection. He's one of those veterans that they need to come through. They went out and got. And the Blackhawks win their first home game, and they host the Sabres on Saturday night.
When the Sharks scored that second goal, you're like, oh boy, uh-oh. But I think it was exciting to see the Blackhawks close it out, finish it. The Sharks are not good, and that's okay. And I think the Blackhawks did what you wanted to see them do against that team, but it felt like they had total control of that game.
It did. They got it to a 3-0 lead, and the dreaded 3-goal lead in hockey, but they never really relented, and they were in command the whole game. So you are from St. Louis. You've worked in Texas. You went to Providence. You have been in Miami. Now you're in Chicago.
I went to Michigan. I worked in Providence.
Oh, you worked in Providence. You went to Michigan. Proud Maize and Blue devotee.
You're just making our viewers hate me.
This is background and context. Because the question is, how much in all of your stops and travels and also your upbringing was hockey a part of your sports experience?
Yeah, it was huge. And funny enough, when I was working in Providence, we covered the Bruins in Boston, and that was the Stanley Cup year that they played the St. Louis Blues. And that was just an incredible experience for me. And I think people need to realize that when you cover a team, you lose your fandom in this industry, because when you're covering a team, it's more fun for me when the team I'm covering is winning.
Right.
And it's better for my career if the team I'm covering is winning.
Right.
Right. Selfishly. So that Blues series, I remember going into it and saying, listen, I just want this to go 7 games. I want this to go 7 games. I'll be happy either way. And I covered the Bruins. Like, I got to know those guys. Like, it's you're rooting for, you know, human beings in that moment. And I wasn't covering the Blues. Right. Like, I was in the Bruins locker room. So this is a great story. So it goes to game set. It was fun. I went home for the games in St. Louis. I stayed at my parents' house.
This is 2019.
We had a big party. This is 2019. We had a big party for all the Boston media in Rhode Island media that was in St. Louis. My parents had everyone over. It was a blast. And we go back to Boston for game 7. And the Blues win. And I'm looking at my boss in like the closing seconds, and my boss looks at me and he's, you know, we're about to go into the Bruins locker room, the dressing room. And my boss looks at me and he goes, you can go on the ice. And I was like, really? And so we had 2 cameras there. And so I got to kind of go be a part of that celebration. And it was really.
Did you go to Blues games growing up?
I did. I more so as I got older.
You hated the Blackhawks growing up.
Despised. and again, I hated the Cubs.
Right.
Right? Like, yeah. I grew up with baseball. Baseball was really
baseball
what.
Baseball in St. Louis.
Baseball in St. Louis is something
else. You're a
else.
St. Louis sports fan.
And
these
I was
are the
in
kind of things you deal with.
Cardinals prime.
Yeah.
My dog's name was Albert growing up. Like, what are we talking about?
That's classic.
But again, when I came here, you know, you were in the Cubs clubhouse. Like, you want those guys to do well. So you lose your fandom when you're in this industry, I think, a little
bit. And what happened to when you got to Florida, that was the beginning of the Panthers kind of making, legitimizing their organization.
Coach Q was there when I got there.
Joel Quenneville arrived before he was basically exiled from the NHL. But they began a process that culminated last year with the Stanley Cup final. They are the defending Stanley Cup champions right now.
Yeah, one of my final assignments in Miami and South Florida was covering Matthew Tkachuk's introductory press conference. And so, I was kind of there on the up and up. And they knew that they needed to make changes. There were some staples that they got rid of there. I'm so happy for that team. I mean, that's just a great organization. And Bill Zito has done a great job of figuring out that roster and putting the pieces together.
I remember when Bill Zito was an agent representing some Blackhawks players. I remember back in the day when he was an NHL agent, and now he is the executive of Stanley Cup champion. So that's awesome. Very big deal. So the Blackhawks back on the ice tomorrow night. They are 2-2-1. Good night for them at the United Center. A lot of fun with the festivities and all of the pomp and circumstances. The Blackhawks know how to throw a party. The Bulls back in action tonight. The final preseason game, thankfully, against the Cavaliers. Here's the big news with the Bulls. Now, preseason is what it is, but the Lonzo Ball story has dominated this week in terms of the Bulls' progress and everything about the Bulls because of how remarkable his presence on the court was and what he did, just not only in coming back, but in coming back and looking as fluid as he did and shooting as well as he did. Now he goes back tonight, and he's expected to play again because he practiced yesterday. It was a light practice, but I think everybody kind of collectively held their breath wondering how would he wake up and how would he feel. Sounds like he felt fine, and he was practicing back on the court.
Best case scenario, and that's what you want to hear, and it's cool to hear him talk about it a day later, and I know we'll get into this more a little bit later, but I think you could see him play a little bit more freely tonight. I think there's less pressure, and you've kind of gotten those initial jitters out of there. I mean, essentially you're playing a game where there's a lot of eyeballs on you. You know, I think everyone kind of is exhaling right now, and he can kind of play a little bit more freely.
What I couldn't believe, first of all, we were all somewhat skeptical, like most people, that he would even get back. And whenever the Bulls would invoke the name of Lonzo Ball over the last 18 months, especially, be like, oh,
yeah,
not another update. Just please don't. Why are you banking on
anything?
Don't
tease us.
Don't tease us, because it's unlikely to happen. So when he comes back, you're impressed, and all the things about this being, you know, medical history and the fact that if this works as well as it looks like it could, that one day they'll be calling it Lonzo Ball surgery. And people will be having cartilage replacements. And this is the kind of thing you want to celebrate and praise and be part of. But I also think this, I could not believe how instinctive he remained when he did little things like the bounce pass to Zach LaVine on the back door that had to be adjusted a certain angle, the defensive instincts to double team and to steal the ball and then to save it running out of bounds and protecting himself, and then how effortlessly he shot the three and hit it. I mean, this looked like a guy who had no rust. Now, he was, I think, appropriately tentative at times. He avoided being reckless. But he made everyone, I think, kind of rethink what they were projecting about this Bulls team if he's going to be part of it. I don't know what to expect from Lonzo Ball, but if you're going to get 15 to 20 minutes a night from him, I think you change your expectations.
Especially if he's going to come in and hit threes and make great passes and get a rebound and a steal and a block, and he's going to contribute. And I think that's really exciting. And it's cool to see his teammates rally around him. I loved that video of all those guys in the locker room giving him the game ball, the signed jersey. That was cool. And you know what? For all the talk about Zach LaVine and all that, to see him kind of take ownership and leadership in that moment, because I initially was watching the video, I'm like, oh, that's interesting that Kobe is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go over to Zach LaVine, who gives him the jersey. And I'm excited to see. Zach's always been a pro, always, especially with us. And I think I'm excited to see him play, especially if he's going to play like a little bit of what we've seen so far in the preseason.
Bulls Cavs tonight at the United Center, right here on the Score as well, of course, leading toward the season opener Wednesday night in New Orleans against the Pelicans and Zion Williamson. Coverage right here on the Score, 6:45. So that is the Bulls college football weekend, a big one. Georgia and Texas, that's probably the biggest game nationally, right here on the Score, 6:45, Saturday night, a primetime experience. If you're driving, if you're at home, that's a game you want to listen to or watch. Alabama at Tennessee, and then the big one in the Big Ten. We're going to talk to Northwestern coach David Braun at 8:45. They host Wisconsin on the lakefront, the final game in their makeshift stadium. But even bigger than that, perhaps, Illinois against Ruthie's Michigan Wolverines. This is the first time I can remember, and we had Brett Bielema on yesterday. Illinois is ranked ahead of Michigan when they're playing. And they are still, though, 3-point underdogs to the Maize and Blue.
With Michigan on the road. And it's going to be an electric. Do you see they're going to wear their, Illinois is going to wear their throwback uniforms?
Yeah, we talked to Brett Bielema about that. Yeah. He said he did not pick them out.
Okay. I am not feeling great about that game as a Michigan Wolverine. I do think it's a huge game for Illinois. I think it's bigger for them than it is for Michigan. I think for us, can I say go for us? Yeah, I am a Wolverine. I can say it.
You went to see them play Arkansas State or whatever, didn't you?
I did.
You drove to Ann Arbor because you wanted to see. You wanted to get back on campus.
Couldn't get Texas tickets. Couldn't get USC tickets. I could, but I just, you know, you'd think I'd have like the hookup by now,
but I don't.
You
didn't maintain season tickets?
I did. I'm not a season ticket holder quite yet. I got to keep chugging along here in this TV career.
But if you do, you're not going to have many Saturdays off.
Pick up more radio shifts.
Yeah.
Listen, Michigan, our season, it is what it is right now. It's hard to watch, to be honest with you. And obviously they beat USC. I think USC obviously is not as good as.
I think you sound spoiled.
We're spoiled, and I think we're coming off a national championship, baby.
Yes.
Like, you can't win every year.
You're the reigning national champions.
And we lost our coach. We lost our quarterback.
We lost the whole coaching infrastructure, basically. Jim Harbaugh took Jesse Minter with him to L.A., and it's a different type of dynamic. Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, he's just basically there to work on his NFL resume, right?
And to have funny comments. Quotable. Yeah, very quotable. I think it's just, you know, it's... Our season, it is what it is. The fact that we can't get a quarterback, almost cursed. You know,
don't do that.
I didn't know.
Don't do that.
I'm just teasing. It's just unbelievable to me. We're Michigan. Like, why is it so hard?
Well, we'll find out how hard it is tomorrow afternoon in Champaign against the Illini. Illini are looking at that game as a litmus test for how good they really are this year. So, college football weekend ahead. Last night, the NFL weekend started with the Saints barely showing up, but the Broncos and Sean Payton's return to New Orleans, 33-10. That was a blowout. Was Al Michaels complaining? He could have been whining because that was a bad game. The Broncos definitely much better than the Saints, who now have lost, I believe, 5 in a row. Dennis Allen could be in trouble.
Yeah, it's not looking good for the defensive head coach who has a bad defense. And I think that's kind of the bottom line there. You know, I think a lot of what helped Matt Eberflus this offseason was that his defense was elite at the end of last season. And so he had that to hang his hat on, and that's certainly not the case for the defensive head coach in New Orleans right now. And it's going to get interesting. But, I mean, just on that night, Thursday night football, Drew Brees is honored, Sean Payton's homecoming, like, really just... Not a great look, and you got to imagine
they're very injured though.
Very injured,
are very
and that's a thing like that counts.
Spencer Rattler did not look like a quarterback good enough to have beaten out once in his life Caleb Williams.
Isn't that crazy?
It is, but Caleb Williams was younger. Spencer Rattler was already at Oklahoma, and that didn't last long.
Right,
because Caleb Williams, the best rookie quarterback that Dave Wannstedt's ever seen. Did I hear that correctly? We need to get to that sound later. Dave Wannstedt, according to the cut sheet, and also from what people said, Dave Wannstedt is quoted as saying that Caleb Williams is better than any rookie quarterback I've ever seen. That's quite a statement.
Well, I'm guessing it probably means with the Bears.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, that's a little
I'm guessing.
Bar.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a tease, listeners. That's a tease. We'll get to that later. We'll get to a lot of things. We've got Bruce Levine at 7:25. Talk to Bruce about the latest with the White Sox story, the athletics report that Jerry Reinsdorf is in active discussions to sell the team. We'll find out what Bruce has discovered and what he thinks about all that. Joe Fortenbaugh, his regular 7:40 segment here on The Score every Friday morning. David Braun, the Northwestern football coach, at 8:45. And Kaylee Chelios, our teammate at the Chicago Sports Network. She was there last night calling, doing the pre- and post-game show for the Blackhawks in their victory over the San Jose Sharks. Ruthie Polinsky from the Chicago Sports Network and the Big Pro Football Show is here for Mully today. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. The pick six is next on The Score.
That's a tease for all you listeners out there. Stay tuned.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
As the Bears take the weekend off, what NFC North game are you watching closest and why? What's the best result from the Bears' perspective? And can you pick the winners of both of the big NFC North contests?
This is a huge weekend in the division. And I think when you look at Lions and Vikings, it might be in a weekend full of big games around the league. Could this be the biggest? Because you've got a Lions team that has realistic Super Bowl aspirations being affected by the absence of Aiden Hutchinson. And you've got the Vikings, the only undefeated team left in the NFC, one of the biggest surprises in the league, and they're going head-to-head. So not only does it have Bear implications, it has, I think, league-wide implications. I'm going Lions. I think that's the biggest one, and I think the Bears fans should want the Lions to win. Here's why. I think the Vikings are the team that you want to, or it's easiest to envision coming back to the pack. The Vikings, you could make the argument, are on borrowed time. Sam Darnold can't do this all season long, can he? I don't know that he can be this efficient and at times explosive, even though he does have Justin Jefferson. He just got Cam Akers, Aaron Jones if healthy. All the things. He's got all the things. Brian Flores, great defense, great play caller, and he's attacking. All those things are true. But if the Vikings come back to earth, it's more likely to envision that than the Lions. I think the Lions are going to rally around this cause. Dan Campbell, the power of his personality is going to make somehow them able to overcome this adversity. I think the Lions beat the Vikings, and I think that's good for the Bears. I also think the Texans are going to beat the Packers. Big brother, C.J. Stroud, is going to go into Lambeau and have some advice for Jordan Love afterward. Hey, buddy, don't worry. It's going to be okay. We just beat you. It's okay. You're going to be fine, Jordan. You're going to be fine. And then that'll be fun. I think the Texans are going to go into Lambeau and beat the Packers. And on Monday morning, we're going to come in here, and the Bears are going to say, hey, we did nothing and had a good weekend.
Look, come here.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility, David. I'm with you. I'm pulling, obviously, for the Texans. Go Texans. I'm actually pulling for the Lions in this one. No, I'm not. I want the Vikings to win. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I want the Vikings. They're at home. You want them to win. You want them to act like they're the new kid on the block against the Lions. Lions, you know, potentially reeling with the loss of their defensive end, their pass rusher, Ruthie's guy, Hutchinson, right? The Michigan guy.
Yeah. Ruthie's guy. Everybody from Michigan talking about Ruthie's guy.
I do love Hutch.
Tell us about Denard Robinson.
Not anymore. Yeah. Denard Robinson was the quarterback when I was there. That tells you everything you need to know.
Hutch. But yeah, I can't wait to watch these games. They're both in the noon window on Sunday, so red zone maybe workout, or maybe I get one of those fancy YouTube TVs and get the split screen going.
Oh, we got to talk about that later with Ruthie. Yeah, no, okay. that's a no go for me.
No go.
It's tough.
Not the multiple.
And David
screens.
David doesn't like to go out to a sports bar and watch games either. We found that out yesterday.
I listened. I heard you guys.
What happened
about
to Vegas Haw?
Vegas Haw would like give me one of those maple banana old fashions, I'll be fine. But I just don't need to watch seven games at once.
That's
sorry.
Fair.
Sorry, we digress.
Detroit, Minnesota, I agree with you. I think the most realistic in my brain right now, the most realistic possibility is that the Vikings taper off and come back down to earth. So you're rooting for Detroit, right? Heading into the season, they were the preseason favorite to win the division, let alone maybe the conference. And you just kind of we're expecting them to be as good as they are. With the Vikings, you see them, you see weaknesses, right? Especially on the offensive side of the ball. I think I love Brian Flores. Anyone who knows me knows I love Brian Flores. Covered him in Miami when he was the head coach there. I just, he's able to rally good or average players and get them to play really, really well. Again, I don't know how sustainable that is. I think Detroit's going to win the game. I think Minnesota, it's time. You know, that's the vibe I'm getting there. And then with Houston and Green Bay, I think Green Bay wins this game. Of course, everyone's rooting for Houston here, but I don't have a ton of confidence in the Texans. In four of their five wins in the season, they were one-score games. And I just don't know. They slaughtered New England, but Buffalo was a 3-point win. Jacksonville was a 4-point win. Beat the Bears game was a one possession game at the end of the game. I just don't have a ton of belief in Houston right now, and so I'm interested to see kind of how they show up at Lambeau and what that looks like. But I do think Green Bay wins that game.
The day I get a positive question from you is the day that I'm gonna be happy.
That's Justin Fields. More on him coming up right here. What did you think of the way Justin Fields addressed his status with the Steelers Thursday afternoon?
I don't think I played, good enough, if I'm being real with you. If I'm being real with myself, I think if, I did play well enough, I don't think there would be, any sort of who should be playing, who should not. So, at the end of the day, we got a few wins. Of course, I'm glad about that. But, there's areas that, I could be better at. And, I'm just going to continue to work on those and continue to get better.
And did Mike Tomlin get this quarterback situation correct?
This is why locker rooms rally around Justin Fields. Right there. You just saw it. He takes accountability. He's really grounded. He's not delusional. I think he's really self-aware, and I really respect the heck out of that guy. And I think what this says a lot to me about is his relationship with Russell Wilson right now, and also what he's seen from Russell Wilson, maybe in training camp, maybe in the preseason. I think that Justin Fields is very real. We've seen quarterbacks get benched, and I don't know if this is technically a benching. In some ways it is, but I guess if Russell Wilson was QB1 heading into the season, is
demoted.
He's being pushed aside. And we've seen quarterbacks where this happens before and they say, I believe I did enough to win. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And I believe that my talent will shine through. Justin Fields sat there and he took accountability and he said, I didn't play well enough. And I think Mike Tomlin, did he get it right? How could we doubt that guy? One of the greatest coaches maybe ever. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what you have in Russ. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they use Justin Fields moving forward. Arthur Smith, if you recall, used two quarterbacks in the Falcons game against the Bears last year. They used Taylor Heinicke and Desmond Ridder in that game. Desmond Ridder had a couple of packages. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Arthur Smith does here.
Excellent.
It could be creative.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ruthie, about the creativity part of it. And I've long been a Justin Fields supporter. I was to the point, keep Justin Fields, trade the pick, build around him.
Yeah, you caved.
I caved. I've come around.
Me
too. I still think it's a decent argument and question. The Bears could at the very least be where they are right now with Justin Fields, maybe even 5-1 with Justin Fields, but they still couldn't be as good as they potentially could be now that they have. And this, that clip is a big reason why. That's not a leader of men. That's not, it's my team. It's my offense. We're 4-2.
But it's not.
He's
a squatter.
And that's the problem. His teammates know he's a squatter. The teammates know he's just renting space. He's not an owner. And he doesn't act like it. He doesn't act like he wants to be an owner. He doesn't even act like he wants to be a renter with an option to buy.
I disagree. I think that he's trying to... First of all, what he is saying is exactly right. This is as accurate.
You don't have to admit it.
This is as accurate as you're going to see Justin Fields. He is right on the money. He is right.
What you did there.
He is right on the money. And Russell Wilson was brought to Pittsburgh to be the starting quarterback. Football teams and organizations, especially coaches, rarely like to stray from their plan. And their plan includes seeing what they're going to be with Russell Wilson. Football organizations think in terms of ceilings and potential and maximizing that potential. And in the Steelers' eyes, they still can maximize the potential of this season by going to Russell Wilson relatively early in it. You're six games in. Justin Fields basically sounded as resigned to his fate as he did because he understands this. He's never been led to believe that he's anything but a placeholder. Now, you may want him to sound like he's a guy that is a leader. I think teammates understand that the way that he plays and the way that he probably sounds in the huddle is good enough because this is a guy who is easy to respect. I think he's definitely easy to respect. I think he's mentally tough more than mentally weak, and that will serve him well because I think he's probably going to be a guy they call on to come back. Russell Wilson, as much respect as I have for him at this stage of his career, unlike a lot of people, I think he had a decent year last year in Denver. It gets overlooked, the numbers that he put together. But I think he's not likely to last this season. He's at the stage of his career where injuries are going to come up. And when they do go back to Justin Fields, I think you heard somebody that will be ready. Even though he may not be saying all the things that you want to. And I just got waved off by Dustin on the Twitch stream.
Doesn't sound like a leader, David. He's a leader. He's got to want to be in charge.
Justin Fields earned the Bears locker room and their respect by leading by example. He was first one in, last one out. He works hard and he wins you with those electric plays. You know, he wasn't playing well and it was disguised by the Steelers winning. He wasn't playing well. It's a lot of what we saw here in Chicago. Missing guys downfield that were open. When he's running, he's not looking to throw like what we're seeing from
Caleb. That's why he's being demoted.
It's why he's being demoted.
Because he has limits
on what
they can do with the passing
game. And I will stand by that.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
With the Bulls back in action tonight at home against the Cavs, you'll hear it here on the Score, 6:45, the coverage begins. What are you expecting from Lonzo Ball? Anything else you hope to see?
Well, I'd like to see Lonzo Ball play another 15 minutes. I don't think that his 15 minutes are up yet, if you will. I think he's a guy that is playing back-to-back games one day apart, and if he can do what he did the other night, just contribute a couple threes, good floor game, a defensive steal, whatever, on the court, back-to-back games, that would be impressive. I also want to see Matas Bezelis. I want to see him back. I hope that he's healthy enough to come back. I want to see him in the rotation. I'd like the idea of him with Io, Bezelis, maybe Lonzo Ball. You got Jalen Smith, and you're going to go 9, maybe 10 deep. And I don't know if you got veterans like Torrey Craig, Javon Hunter. Javon Carter, I'm sorry. No, Javon Hunter, yeah.
Javon Carter.
Javon Hunter. You have veterans who I don't know how they fit because they're going to be the odd man out. Talen Horton Tucker is a guy that you're going to see again probably tonight. He's going to make the team, I would anticipate. So a lot of the fringe type things. I don't know how much they plan to play starters tonight, but they were entertaining the other night. They had 7 players in double figures. I want to see Bezelis worked in there and, of course, a little bit more Lonzo Ball.
Well, you just said you don't know how much time the starters are going to play. I'm hoping, David, for 0.00 minutes. I'm hoping for a bunch of DNPs, which got me to do not watch the other day. I want to see Lonzo Ball start. That's what I want to see tonight. I want to see him start. I'm totally in agreement with you. I don't want to see Bezelis back in there. I want to see Io back in there, but on a minutes limit, that's fine. I don't want to see anybody who's going to start next Wednesday down in New Orleans in a basketball uniform tonight. Be healthy.
Bubble wrap.
Bubble wrap. Billy Donovan missed practice yesterday with stay home, Billy. It's okay. Listen to the game. Lay in bed. Listen to Chuck. Okay. Listen to Chuck call it. That's just fine. I Talen Horton Tucker, start the game. Play every minute. Right? Break a massive sweat and play every single minute. Lonzo Ball plays that opens the game in the first quarter, sits the second quarter, comes out for the second half as the starting point guard, and sits down after five more minutes. That's fine. That's what I want to see tonight.
When it comes to Lonzo Ball, I think everyone would just like to see some consistency, like that he could do it again. And like we mentioned earlier, I think he'll play a lot more freely, maybe just less eyeballs, less pressure. This isn't the first game back, right? Like, this isn't the game. You know, he can go out there, maybe take a little bit more risks, feel a little bit more comfortable, maybe be a little less hesitant in some situations. But if he can come in and play 16, 15 minutes a game and contribute and make threes and get blocks and a steal and a rebound and an assist, like, that's going to help the team. And I think just finding where that fits is going to be really key. When it comes to injuries and those sorts of things, I feel as though because there are so many new pieces on this team and you're trying to make them all fit together, as you were saying, where do these veterans fit? Like, they're playing with rotations, they're playing with groupings. I do think we're going to see the starters play a little bit tonight. I don't have any backing on that at all, but I'm with you. I hope Billy Donovan's okay. Billy, you could take this one off if you need to.
I've answered this question, you know, a lot, obviously.
The voice of Connor Bedard. What was your impression of the Blackhawks home opener besides Connor Bedard, who we just heard from there? After five games, what do you think looks the best reason to watch the Blackhawks?
I think, as we talked about earlier, it was the most complete game that they've played this season, start to finish. The Blackhawks had control of this game. And we mentioned the Sharks are not a good team. I've heard a lot of people compare this group to where the Blackhawks were this time last year. And that makes a lot of sense. I think what's so exciting about this team is putting those veteran pieces around Connor Bedard. We're seeing the no-look pass. There's a swagger. There's a confidence. It's year two. He's not the rookie. And I just think it's going to be really cool to see kind of him take another leap in his growth. What looks like the best reason to watch this team, and hear me out, the power play. I think the way that they're playing on the power play breeds so much confidence. And yeah, maybe you're doing it against a bad team, but again, that breeds confidence, not just in the power play, but how you play the rest of the game and how you play every shift. Five power play goals the last three games, like, that's really significant.
Compared to last year, yeah, it's a huge improvement.
Really significant.
No doubt about it. Good point.
So Nick Foligno's doing a nice job, I think, as the center captain of this team so far, right? He scored some goals. But Teuvo Teravainen, somebody you brought back, right? He was a former Hawk, back with the Hawks, right? And he's been really good so far, and that's another reason to watch him and Bedard. Both of them had two assists apiece last night, so that's good.
I was there the night that Teuvo made his debut for the Blackhawks back in 2015, and it was one of those nights pre-Bedard, in the midst of the heyday, where you still felt like, wow, this kid is special. And he was just a kid coming over, and it was table time. And you couldn't really, Quenneville couldn't pronounce his name and all the things. And then you see him go away to Carolina, traded because of a salary dump, not because of anything else related to that. It was one of those just phases in the growth of a team. They had to get rid of him, and they had to get something in return. He went to Carolina, made himself into a very good player. I love his return. To me, he's as much fun to watch. I don't want to say as Bedard. Bedard is special. He's going to be a handful of young stars in the league that makes everybody want to watch. He's going to be a perennial all-star. But Teuvo Teravainen is easily my favorite Blackhawk, not named Bedard. And he is worth the price of admission right now. So I love watching Teuvo play. He sees the ice so well. And he's such a clever passer, and so that is reason one. I do think, Ruthie, it's a great point on the power play. Teuvo, Bedard, Seth Jones, Foligno, and Bertuzzi, that is a good five. Mm. That's a good starting five on the power play. They make an impact, and they're getting good goaltending. It's just fun to see the Hawks play a game where you know they're going to be competitive, and it's been way too long for us to wait for that.
Terrific question. Need to get that answer. Don't have it for you today.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine. He'll join you guys at 7:25. What do you think happens this weekend in baseball? Where will things stand when we're back here Monday morning? And who will be the player America is talking most about?
I think we're going to have Yankees-Dodgers. It looks like it's trending that direction. The Yankees fall back to, obviously, a great comeback from the Guardians. Nobody in Cleveland wants to hear it, but it seems like the Yankees, that was the game they were going to lose. They may not lose again. I don't think the Dodgers are going to lose again. Dodgers could wrap it up this afternoon later in Queens. They play a day game. Begins at 4 o'clock Central, Dodgers-Mets. Jack Flaherty on the mound. I think they probably clinch it. Wouldn't surprise me at all. And everybody's going to be talking about Ohtani. Heard somebody who I respect, been around baseball for a very long time, asked me the question yesterday, is Shohei Ohtani the best player in baseball history? Mm. It's not a dumb question. It's something to consider. And I think that's going to be the World Series question. Ohtani and Judge, they've already got the commercials.
Well, they're already like hyping it on social media. Anytime those guys do something in the game compared to like the other team, it's crazy to see like the difference in the hype that even MLB's social media will put out there. But again, now Judge had a moment yesterday that ended up getting spoiled, right, by the Guardians and Fry. I mean, that would have been like unbelievable. They would be sitting there up 3-0 heading into this afternoon, ready to celebrate in Cleveland. Cleveland rocks for the Yankees. But now at least that's a series. Mookie Betts, though, like quietly, well, he's in the shadows of Shohei Ohtani. Mookie Betts, because he's playing right now in the field, plus he's playing positions like he could be an all-star almost at like every spot, minus catcher. He could be an all-star.
He could be as versatile as David Fry.
But David Fry can catch. That's Mookie Betts can catch, right? He's not quite the Swiss Army Knight that Ben Zobrist is. So I also am all for Yankees-Dodgers, but I think we should talk a little bit more about Mookie Betts, a must-see guy getting forgotten about because of Shohei Ohtani.
The Dodgers have 3 wins by 8 or more runs this series, and they've outscored the Mets by 21 runs so far. Wow. They're going to beat the Mets. It's the highest run differential by a team in the first 4 games of a postseason series all time. How about that?
That's crazy. That's a blowout city.
And I was going to bring up Mookie Betts, Dustin, because I didn't know if it was recency bias, but, you know, he's getting hotter at the plate. And I covered Mookie when he was the Red Sox and when he was traded from the Red Sox. And that, you know, my poor husband, who's a Boston native, last night was watching the game and said, man, wonder where you could find a guy like Mookie Betts. And he's just electric. And I think with Ohtani, you know, everyone's talking about Ohtani. The other guys are going to start coming up. And I think Mookie Betts is one of them.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
In college football, who is Saturday's game bigger for, Illinois or Michigan? Who you got and what are the other game or games you're planning to follow?
I am setting myself up to be pleasantly surprised if Michigan wins this game, but I do not think they will. I think it's a bigger game for Illinois because I think, as we mentioned, Michigan season is Michigan season, right? Like, it is what it is. You lost your head coach. You lost your quarterback. Everything's new. And it doesn't look so good. It's hard to watch. I went to the game against Arkansas State, and that was not fun to watch, and we won the game. Barely. It was ugly. And I just think that Illinois has so much more to prove here. This is a game that they don't typically win. But it does feel like they're playing for something special. It's a huge game for them at home. Throwback unis. You know, the whole thing. I don't see Michigan coming in clutch here. It doesn't feel like this is a very clutch season for the Wolverines.
Well, David, at 2:30, you're going to have to get yourself multi-screen action.
Okay.
Because you've got Bama, Tennessee.
All right.
You got Notre Dame, Georgia Tech.
Wow.
And you got Michigan, Illinois. Now, here's what I'm still trying to figure out. I didn't go to the guide. Ruthie, maybe you know if you've looked into this. David, maybe you know. I think I brought this up briefly yesterday. One of the listings that I'm looking at, number 24, Michigan, at number 22, Illinois. It's a 230 kick on Paramount Plus. Is it exclusively Paramount Plus? Is it on CBS and Paramount Plus? Because if it's on Paramount Plus, that bothers me, and that's just another reason why I feel like I might have to try to get everything done by 2:30 to go out, because I don't like trying to toggle from Paramount Plus over the four-letter network toggle. Over to the ABC network.
It's tough toggle
to get all of that,
yeah,
all of that in. But I do think I'm pulling for Illinois. One of the two teams I hate most in college football is Michigan. I think you're fantastic, but I have a couple of fantastic people I know from that have gone to school there. My daughter at one point wanted to go to school there. It was like, I appreciate that you want to go to school there, but like, let's lower the bar just a little bit. It's almost near impossible to get into the University of Michigan. But the game that we're carrying at 6:45, I mean, how good is number one Texas? Is Georgia the team that everybody had preseason number one, or the team that lost to Alabama who hasn't looked so good? And if the Texas quarterback struggles, is this going to be the passing of the torch to Arch Manning? You know, I mean, could we have the Arch Manning official coronation on Saturday night in front of everybody, where he like comes off the bench and beats Georgia at Texas? Wow, that'll be a game.
Texas will beat Georgia. It's in Austin. I think that's going to be a fun game to listen to and watch. I definitely think that the afternoon slate is full of good games, not to mention Northwestern at home against Wisconsin in the Big Ten.
Well, to your point, David, that's an 11 a.m. kick. So, I mean, you really, it's like really nicely laid out. You can watch Wisconsin, Northwestern, then you get that three-pack at 2:30.
Yeah.
Then at 6:30, 7 o'clock, you got the big one.
Sneaky good game in the Big Ten also. Indiana-Nebraska, undefeated Hoosiers. I think they stay unbeaten. They're going to beat Nebraska. Don't forget about down in the Music City, Ball State goes to Vanderbilt. That'll be a good game. Maybe. Doubt it.
Chirp, chirp.
Vandy's good.
Hate to break it to you, Dustin. Michigan-Illinois is on CBS. Good. So it gives you one less reason to hate Michigan.
And in that game, I think that Brett Bielema, I think this is the year, this is bigger to them, and it'll show. They are ready for it, and they will win despite wearing probably what will be, I don't like the throwback uniform idea. But despite that, they will win. They will beat Michigan. They will stop the run. They will protect the football, and I think the Illini will be the upset victors over the team that hail to the victors.
Mm.
Sorry, Ruthie, but I think Maize and Blue goes down to the Fighting Illini, ILL.
But now the problem is, David, is that we've all picked Illinois.
Right.
That's true.
We've all picked Illinois.
I know, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You can't win the national championship every year, you know?
Wow. That's a flex from Ruthie. She is in for Mully. We have got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, here we go. Is there one player you could see the Bears targeting and trading for before that trade deadline? Who would it be and why?
Well, let's be clear that this is purely the fantasy football portion of our show, that when you talk about Bears making a trade, there's not real evidence that they are pursuing one, nor necessarily need to. But this is the NFL. There were four deals made this week, and I don't know that anybody expected the activity to heat up this early. So in that context, in that vein, we heard from Max Crosby yesterday. Maybe we'll hear some of the audio later. Max Crosby in Las Vegas wants out, so it seems. Who blames him? Who could blame him at all? Davante Adams forced his way to New York. They get rid of every good player they get. Look at the list of players and talent that's passed through that organization, from Khalil Mack to Amari Cooper to Derek Carr. Go down the list. It's a long one. I could definitely see Max Crosby being shopped, being moved, being traded. Yeah, he wants to go to Detroit. Don't let him. If you're the Bears and Max Crosby's available, I said the other day that the Bears are not one pass rusher away from the Super Bowl. I still don't know that they are. They a Super Bowl team if they add Max Crosby. But I'm not sure that they're not, if they would.
Oh.
So I'm conflicted and confused. And if they got Max Crosby, I could talk myself into some big things being possible maybe as early as this year. So I wouldn't rule it out. But that would be the guy. If I could gift them one thing, it would be a pass rusher as good as Max Crosby, because I think he wants out and the Bears should let him in.
Max Crosby would be a very different scenario to me than Hassan Reddick, right? Like, everyone was talking about Hassan Reddick this week. Should the Bears be in on that? Should they, you know, kick the tires? Max Crosby, that's different to me. And Chef Poles, you never know what's cooking. And he's going to listen. He's going to call. He's going to find out. And I think it's interesting. I think that this Bears defense is so good already. They are 12 straight games, 21 points or less, allowing offenses to score 21 points or less. That's unbelievable. But if you get someone that's going to just take down the quarterback all the time.
And he's a good culture guy.
He'd
be a good culture
guy.
Which
Hassan Reddick is not, it seems. So it seems.
Okay. We don't know what's going on with Jaquan Brisker.
Good point.
I think Matt Bowen last week on the midday show, or I think maybe now he's shifted over to the afternoon show. I'm not sure. They're dividing and conquering their guests between those two day parts.
Producer problems.
Basically said he's the straw that stirs the drink for the Bears defense.
Yeah, he did.
He's the intimidator. Other teams fear when that guy's coming downhill into the box, hits really, really hard. So while Max Crosby, like, it's a shiny toy. Don't get me wrong. I'm all in. Max Crosby, sign me up. Nothing wrong with that. But for them to maintain, they were able to beat the Jaguars in London without Brisker. Are they going to be able to win? What's the next step for the Bears? David, you mentioned they're not a pass rusher away from being in the Super Bowl. The next step is winning the North and never giving it back, right? Or how about split the games in the North, right? How about go 500 in the North? If you don't have Brisker, that could be a problem. There's a couple of safeties. One name I wrote down, Buda Baker, might be available.
I like Buda Baker.
Okay, and how about another guy? He's traveled around a little bit, but I think he's still got a little bit in the tank. Guy the Titans are about to cut. They're saying he can go out and look for a trade, right? What's his name? I was just about to look it up. He's with the Jets, Seahawks, and now he's with the Titans.
Safety?
Yeah. I forget. Sorry, that's bad to forget. But I was just about to look it up, and I got caught off guard.
Okay, so you want the Bears? You want the
Thomas.
Bears?
Thomas.
You want the Bears to trade for a safety?
Right.
That's interesting because of
Brisker. We don't know what's going on with Brisker.
And you know what? if he played quarterback, the quarterback position, you know, this is a different conversation, right? The quarterback and the concussion conversation is so different because it's so high profile. And this is a guy that has a history with head injuries, and you're right. I mean, that's very interesting. Very interesting.
Jamal Adams.
I saw that.
He's requested to be traded.
Injury history's long.
All right. But I mean, if he's not in concussion protocol, I'm just saying he's kind of a brisker type, older version, maybe. Might be an interesting pairing in that.
Is he a culture risk? I don't know.
I think the Bears' culture is so good, and that's a really tip of the cap to Eberflus, that I think they could absorb it.
Did you see someone, as always makes the rounds during a bye week, you have a lot of time, the social media contingents tend to put out some propaganda. Flusie is 9-5 in his last 14 games.
That's right.
That's a winning coach. Now, you forget the previous ones before that 9-5 stretch, but
to me, it's just this reminder that these things take time, and you don't have time in the NFL anymore. But this has been a complete culture renewal for the Chicago Bears.
An overhaul.
Yep. And guess what? The head coach deserves the credit for that.
Dustin talked about taking the North. You can listen to the Take the North podcast. Yes, Mark Grody, Mark Grody has replaced me on the Take the North podcast. He joins Dan Weider, who does a terrific job. It is a great podcast. They break down the biggest stories every week, and next week's against the Commanders is a big one. Download the Odyssey app, search 670 The Score, and tap follow to receive alerts on our Bears coverage. And you can follow the Take the North on the Odyssey app as well, or wherever you get your podcasts. There's a little bit of news regarding the White Sox plans to possibly seek to build a ballpark on the 78 overnight. Want to touch on that or whatever you want to talk about. 312-644-6767. Lonzo Ball, the Blackhawks, the game that was an epic playoff matchup last night between the Guardians and the Yankees. Let us know what you want to talk about. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Welcome back. It's Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Enjoying this Friday morning. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully. Ruthie is my co-host on the Big Pro Football Show on the Chicago Sports Network. We're every night at 5:30. Looking forward to tonight's show as well. So we're talking about a lot of things here this morning, and I think one of them will be the White Sox and the news this week that Jerry Reinsdorf is in active discussions to sell the team, something the White Sox said they will not respond to because it's a rumor and unnamed sources. The Athletic was reporting, other outlets confirmed it. This morning's report in Crane's Chicago Business, chicagobusiness.com, is interesting because I think you could relate this headline and this story to what's going on with the White Sox. And Ruthie says, the University of Illinois is scrapping its plans to build a $285 million research and teaching facility called the Discovery Partners Institute in the South Loop on the proposed site of the 78. So something that they have planned over the last 2 years, a $285 million research and teaching facility, a $285 million investment and project, is now being scrapped at the patch of land known as the 78, where the White Sox also have designs on building a ballpark. How do you interpret that?
It feels like the university doesn't want to be involved with a baseball stadium also there, or maybe they were forced out. It's interesting to me because to me this does not sound like they think the White Sox are leaving the city of Chicago.
Well, this move, you could interpret it that way, and that's what I was kind of leading you down that path, because that's what I kind of interpret it as well. You could make the argument, and this is very early, just it broke overnight. It's on the website. We're trying to reach out to some people to see if this is related to the White Sox ambition to build a ballpark there, and they're not shy about that ambition. They're hosting a neighborhood party, I believe, on Sunday to show people at the 78 what they have envisioned for that space. Everybody has understood that the White Sox would like to build a ballpark in that space. So this, and it's all part of a broader investment in the city by Related Midwest, $9 billion investment into the neighborhood and business development, and the White Sox would be, under those plans, the anchor tenant. Now we have news that somebody else, another, the University of Illinois, which was going to be a neighbor to the anchor tenant, is ceasing its $285 million investment in that land.
Which, when you think about it, there's so much work that goes into raising those funds and figuring and planning that facility. To just scrap it means there's a reason.
Well, it looks like this began in 2022, this plan by the University of Illinois. Back before this, I think, vision maybe that we were aware of, maybe it wasn't something they were not aware of, but or maybe they knew all along. But it doesn't seem like a research and teaching facility fits the thumbprint or into the profile of what you would think of as a bustling ballpark village, right?
Sure.
So let's go to the game, and then maybe afterward we can stop by the Discovery Partners Institute, honey. I don't think that's something people say or think like.
Yeah.
It's more like, what restaurant do we want to go to? What bar can we stop at? how much fun can we have in this excursion to the South Loop, to the 78, to that area. And I think if you're talking about a bustling area building up around this anchor tenant, I don't think that all of a sudden you're thinking think tank. So maybe I'm getting ahead of ourselves. Maybe this is not a leap we can reasonably make, but it seems logical to at least assume or wonder if this bit of news could be related to the White Sox plans, or does the University of Illinois know something that's further along, and is this all related to what Jerry Reinsdorf was reported to have been doing this week, and that is having active discussions to sell the White Sox, according to The Athletic. What do you think? 312-644-6767. Does this mean anything? Do you have thoughts on whether the White Sox should stay in the city, or does this news that they're talking to a group led by Dave Stewart, who wants to bring baseball to Nashville, bother you, Sox fans or baseball fans? 312-644-6767. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.